It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It is time for California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. And look who's here, Barry Herbst, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn, back. California Wine Country, of course, with Dan Berger. Dan, introduce our guests today.
Robert Watkins and Susanna Mannion there from Mount Beautiful Wine Winery in on the South Island of New Zealand, on the west, on the
you gotta
eastern
love,
coast.
A winery named Mount Beautiful.
Oh, well, that's a start. That's a begin. That's where it all begins. It's gorgeous out down there. The whole country is gorgeous, but these are great wines, and this is the beginning of a new adventure for all of us here in California to see better distribution of New Zealand wine. Not just the same old, but, you know, some interesting things that are from grape varieties that do well down there, but we don't see enough of. So, Susanna, nice to see you, and welcome.
Thank you.
It was fun to meet you at the tasting the other day, and it was great to try some of those wines. Robert, and you split your time between two gorgeous places.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to live mostly in Lake Tahoe and then New Zealand. I go down usually every month. I try to take off summer and spend that in Tahoe, but other than that, I'm down there 2 weeks, at least a month, and keep things organized and ticking away.
So give us the history of Mount Beautiful.
Well, it's a project that was started by David Teese, who's a Kiwi who lives in Berkeley. So David is an economist who started a winery. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you look at it that way, but he's still a professor at Berkeley. He does a master class there, but he also has a company called BRG in Emeryville, the Berkeley Research Group.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so that's his kind of his day gig. And he started to – he's from Blenheim, so he went back to Blenheim a few years ago and realized with all the new plantings that he had missed the boat if he wanted to start a winery. So he then hired a geologist to look for a location somewhere in the South Island that hadn't been planted before. So not an established grape-growing region. And 2 years later, the gentleman came back and gave us this site, which is just north of the Wiper region, about an hour and a half north of Christchurch. And the vineyard was planted starting in 04. First vintage was 07.
And Susanna, where do you live?
I live in the East Bay.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Dan.
So just as a starting point, I've been to New Zealand, I think, 10 times, either 9 or 10. And my wife and I got very excited about these wines because they were really distinctive. Not necessarily different just to be different, but because they were really varietally true to type. And when you smell these wines, the first time you smell them, you say, boy, that's exactly what the textbook says. So it's kind of fun. And we're taking advantage of some of the weakness of the Kiwi dollar, and these wines aren't overpriced.
Definitely.
Yeah, they do tend to, with the pricing with the New Zealand dollar, and we self-import, so we have our own import company into the U.S., so we don't add a margin on the import side. We put all the margin just like we produced it here. So we're able to offer our distributors pricing, U.S. dollars, FOB Napa. They don't have to worry about currency fluctuations. They don't have to put DIs together. We do all our kind of hard work for them and let them kind of easily just pick up.
Where are the wines available?
So now we're
Bottle Barn.
38
you
states.
You got them?
Yeah.
They're at Bottle Barn. That's good.
Yeah.
So we're in 38 states now, and we do about 10 export countries.
Great.
Great.
What's the first one? We have to get something open.
Well, let's do the...
Dan's Jonesing over there.
I'm nervous.
Do both of them, or right. Do the start with the older one. So I brought... particularly for us, the Sauvignon Blanc from North Canterbury is a little bit different than it would be from Marlborough. Mm-hmm. So I thought we'd show at least how the wine ages as a Sauvignon Blanc, which is not really what it's known for in New Zealand. So this is a 2012 Sauvignon Blanc, which for us when it was released was really kind of our house style. You know, every couple of years, 9 was really close to what we wanted in 12. And then we also have the current vintage, which is 2018.
Mm-hmm. And then you brought a newer Sauv Blanc.
18 vintage.
This
is definitely that older style.
Yeah, so, you know, there's no oxidation yet in this wine. There's still plenty of fruit left. But we're trying to make wines that aren't that really upfront aggressive New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. We want more creamy mid-palate, long finish, really good minerality. And to me, this... And they do age. You know, it's certainly this wine wouldn't be for everybody, mm-hmm. but it certainly hasn't gone off. It has a lot of kind of interesting flavors.
So. Really clean. Bone dry. Dude, doesn't finish with
really, salad. Really dry, but also an aromatic, which is reminiscent of sort of artichokes almost. Mm-hmm. It's that beautiful green herbal notes that you get out of cooler climate. And that's exactly what this wine does. Displays that.
Yeah, I stuck my nose in there. Artichokes, you're right. Very cool.
Well, I'm a big fan of this style. Most people don't have a reference for it because this is a style that was more popular, about 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And this one's still hanging on really, really well considering that it's got some age. And you typically don't age Sauvignon Blanc, but this one's really beautiful.
Yeah. Handled it well. There's an artichoke recipe in the PD today. It'd be good with that dish. Goat cheese, baked.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a huge artichoke guy. Yeah. It's California Wine Country with Dan Berger and Barry Herbst from Bottle Barn. New Zealand wine importer. Robert, what's your last name?
It's Watkins.
Watkins. Okay. And Susanna Mannion. Susanna, what is your role at Mount Beautiful?
I'm Mount Beautiful's marketing manager.
Okay. But you live in the East Bay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Travel a lot, I bet.
Not too much.
Not too bad.
But I have been to New Zealand twice since I joined the team.
Man, I've always wanted to go there. Doesn't it sort of look like Sonoma County in parts?
It's green, so. For sure.
That's what the hills.
Parts of it remind me of some of the back parts of some of the Hawaiian Islands. Some of it reminds me of Oregon. Certainly, some of it reminiscent of driving through Sonoma, even Bennett Valley down here.
Yeah.
Very similar, actually.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I always wanted to go. Is that the newer one?
The new one is
this 18, did you say?
This is 18.
Yeah, you ready for that?
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Much fresher, a little bit of almost a pineapple note. To that aroma with a little bit of kiwi, not the bird, the sort of kiwi fruit.
Totally different nose.
Yeah, really different nose, and fresh and delightful. It's got some freshness to it that you don't see very often in other Sauvignon Blancs. You won't see this style coming out of Europe. They just don't have enough cold weather to do that.
Correct. Yeah, we're quite cool. So we're about 8 km from the ocean. And Mount Beautiful actually is between us and the ocean. So it does kind of regulate some of the influences of the ocean currents coming off of there. But in general, we're only about 1,120 growing days. So we're just really on the border of not being able to ripen. Although we've seen in the last couple of years, we've gone up another 20 days. So that's happened in the last 6 years. But even so, we're always somewhat pushing the edge on ripening when we get close to harvest, so we're always butt up against weather. Which is
so when do you harvest? What's the time of year you're harvesting?
We typically harvest started the third week of March and then through April. So if it's a quick and clean harvest, we'll be done by the third week of April. If it's like a couple years ago, it was 2 months to get harvest completed. But in general, we can do it 3 weeks, done and dusted, starting the third or last week of March.
So your 19 is already bottled, I suppose.
We've bottled the Riesling and the Rosé. We bottled the Sauvignon Blanc the 23rd of October. And then the Chardonnay and Pinot, obviously, next year sometime.
What's the most popular wine in as far as, you know what I'm trying to say?
Consumer.
Yeah, in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Well, I would say traditionally it's always been Sauvignon Blanc. I mean, that's been the go-to for New Zealand for many years.
Okay.
But as a group, we've started to move out of that. Everybody's kind of been there, done that. And so the next really wine for us, not only for us in Mount Beautiful, but also for the industry, would be Pinot Noir. There's many different expressions of Pinot Noir in the different regions. So that's really where we want to go next, both as an industry and as a winery for us as well.
Talk about this 2018, Dan.
Well, this 2018 Sauvignon Blanc is so fresh and fruity. I mean, it has that beautiful sort of fresh gooseberry component, not the canned gooseberry, but the fresh gooseberry. So it's really spicy almost. It's got a little bit of that floweriness to the aroma, plus kiwi fruit, maybe a trace of pineapple, but fresh pineapple. So this is really a very appealing wine. Can you imagine serving this with not terribly spicy Thai food, because it's got so much presence in the mouth.
It's pretty rich. Delicate, yeah.
Yeah.
The texture is fantastic, very smooth, no rough edges, no sharpness from acidity or any skin tannins or anything like that. It's just really clean,
really pretty,
beginning
beautifully
to end.
Handled in the winery, plus also handled well in the vineyard too, because there was no bruising of the fruit. This is just clean as a whistle.
Yeah, if you look at all the kind of the whole range, balance is kind of comes to mind on everything. So there's not a preponderance of any one component. Everything's quite well integrated. In the case of the Sauvignon Blanc, yields are quite low. So we're at 8 tons a hectare, which I know you're going to ask, what is that per acre?
Yeah.
So divided by 2.47 would be your tons per acre. So we're really in the red wine territory as far as yields go.
Around three and a half, three quarters.
So yeah, 3.5 for Sauvignon Blanc. When in Marlborough, they'd be doing 16 tons a hectare.
Jeez.
So we're, the yields are quite low. Fruit's very concentrated. And then we're probably the last to bottle in New Zealand, so plenty of contact with Lees. We're not in any rush. We want to get that in the bottle and then with bottle age before release. But we're catching up a little bit now, vintage-wise, because of sales. But we're still kind of one of the last to bottle.
And with all... just about 98% of New Zealand wines screw capped.
Yeah.
We, it's coming from the California wine industry, going back to New Zealand. We did a couple. The first wine we did in screw tops is one of the wines we'll drink today. It was really hard. Cork finish. It was really hard to do it. There's no cork supplier. If you think about it, why would there be? There's very little glass, so I had to bring the glass over from France. There's only a couple bottling lines that can do cork in New Zealand.
Really?
It was something I didn't even think about when I went to put that single barrel, the 10-barrel Pinot, in under a cork finish, and it was really hard. So,
rethinking that.
I'm probably rethinking that whole, I'm starting to love screw tops more and more.
Yeah. Look better and better.
Well, and New Zealand has become quite the, as you pointed out before we came on the air, it's the bucket list number one. You want to talk a little bit about that?
It's really, so I think I'm on my 75th trip. When I first got over there, I had never been to New Zealand before I started working with Mount Beautiful. And, your first impression is it lives up to every expectation. It's really heaven on earth from a visual standpoint. And there's no one there. I mean, it's 4.5 million people, which is, the Bay Area?
Yeah, right.
So, and then doing business over there is a little difficult, so you have to get through that. Accounting is quite different. Banking is quite different. So that was kind of a low for me, and now I've kind of come back up somewhere in the middle. But it's an incredible country with incredible people, and just there's so much to do and see. And people think it's so far away, but it's really the same flight to London plus an hour, and you're there.
That's it, huh? Oh, wow.
It's 12 hours, to Auckland. Then, you can either stay in North Island, or it's another hour to get down to Christchurch or Queenstown, an hour and a half. But it's not that much farther than going to Europe.
In March
from the West Coast.
In March of this year, we my wife and I hosted another couple, and we drove from Blenheim to central Otago, and it took us 6 hours. It was nothing. It's from the top of the north of the South Island to the bottom of the South Island. It took 6 hours. It was easy.
It is California Wine Country with Dan Berger. Barry Herbst is here from Bottle Barn. It's brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. Susanna Mannion and Robert Watkins here from Mount Beautiful Wines. It's mountbeautiful.com, mtbeautiful.com. And...
there are some California winery owners that actually own property in New Zealand. Foley Wineries owns, I think, Vavasour and a couple of others down in New Zealand. So even Californians are investing down there.
Well, why not? It's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous, absolutely.
And the wines are wonderful.
I think the most impressive thing about the wines of New Zealand right now are the reds. I mean, as much as everybody loves the whites, but boy, I tell you, the reds slay me. And it took me about five visits before I figured this out. But the last few visits, it's all I've been drinking down there. It's the red wines.
Really?
Yeah, they're really doing a great job.
Definitely an uptick in sales, too. It used to be, you know, 80-20 Sauvignon Blanc white wines to reds, and now closer to 60-40 in our store, at least.
And how many different Mount Beautiful wines do you have?
Just
you
have two right now. I think Pinot and Sauvignon Blanc. I think some of these aren't available from the local wholesaler yet. I don't think it's Young's Market.
Young should have most of them, but sometimes they're
in flux.
Yeah, you know. They should have pretty much everything in stock now. But we only do so we have six wines now because we've added rosé to the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've added a 10-barrel, a barrel selection Pinot, which I don't have an opener for because I do screw tops.
We should have one around here.
But I'm sure
we got them all over the place here.
We have someone to get that open for me.
And this one next?
Yeah. What do we do? The Chardonnay?
Chardonnay? Oh, sounds good.
So,
pardon me?
So originally the vineyard was planted about 65% Sauvignon Blanc, and the balance Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. But over the last couple of years, we've added two Pinot Noir blocks to the mix. So now we're getting a little bit more balance of what we should be making as far as production on the vineyard side.
What year is this?
So this Chardonnay should be 2017.
Justify the expense of French oak barrels for aging. That's a lot of expense.
If that was the only thing I had to justify expense-wise, I'd be in...
You would think an economist would know better.
I'd be in pretty good shape. But, you know, there's really no... You can't compare it. So we tend to import about 60 barrels a year. So it's not huge, but we probably have 400 barrels now in stock. And our particular problem with Chardonnay is when you get into a Chardonnay program, because we didn't originally make it, where do you get white wine barrels? Mm. So we had to kind of horse trade with a couple of the wineries to get some used white barrels when we did our first vintage of Chardonnay, which would have been 14. And it was a relatively new addition to the line. We had a small vineyard, a small block of Chardonnay. We wanted to see if it would ripen before we really went off the deep end. And that little block, it was only less than a hectare, came up really, really nice. And so we grafted over one of our Sauvignon Blancs to Chardonnay about 6 years ago. And so this is the result. It's a little bit of that smaller block, but mostly from the new graft.
That's very special wine. That really is interesting. It's got richness without it being over the top. It's got beautiful fruit. The fruit is more citrusy with just a teeny little hint of honey. I don't know where that comes from. Maybe some... Was there any malolactic here?
There will be. So this one is probably close to 40% ml, and the malolactic was done in barrel. That is probably as high as we'd go. The first couple of vintages, we didn't do any ml. We just really wanted to see what the base fruit was giving us before we started to really get too caught up in oak or...
That's good.
You know, ml, but this will be our house style from this vintage kind of going out. We don't want it to get flabby. We really want good acidity, long finish, but we want the integration of the oak to be a part of the whole, not a kind of a necessary.
That's a very pretty Chardonnay, because in so many cases, the acidity levels in white wines from New Zealand typically are so high that it's difficult. The wines come out, they're a little awkward and unbalanced, and you say to yourself, well, should I age this for an extra year or two for all the pieces to come together? This one is right there. This is only 17, and you're looking at, so it's only 2 years older thereabouts, and it's already developed this beautiful patina of character. It really has richness without it being flabby.
Della Tofola, for 60 years, more than 60 years, they've been making equipment for the wine industry worldwide, but they're based right here in Santa Rosa. From crushers to conveyors, pumps to presses, filters to fillers, complete packaging solutions. You can call 544-5300. Everything to get your grapes from vineyard to bottle easily. It's Della Tofola USA. They're online at delatofola.us. Delatofola.us. Our guests today are Susanna Mannion and Robert Watkins. Mount Beautiful Wines in North Canterbury in New Zealand. I wanted to ask, as far, you know, because we're so Sonoma County oriented here, as far as New Zealand goes, how many different wine regions are there? I mean, is it the whole country
that makes wine?
Or?
There's really officially 10, but there's probably 8 that are well known. Mm-hmm. And they're scattered throughout both the North Island and the South Island, but they're quite separate from each other. They don't not like Kanapa and Sonoma, they almost run into each other at some point. They're very separate in New Zealand, and they all have a bunch of different offerings. Some are known for more Pinot Noir, Central Otago, Marlboro region would be more Sauvignon Blancs and Marlboro region.
Is that a city, a town?
Blenheim is the town. Marlboro would be the region.
Now why did it get that name? Because we all think of cigarettes when you say Marlboro.
Right. Right, that's a good question. Maybe Bob would know, but I don't know that. And then, like, Hawke's Bay would be more known for some of the Syrahs, and it's probably the only place to make Merlot or Cabernet.
Do they all get along with each other, like we in Napa?
Really, very closely. You'd be amazed at the connection between these folks. Even the people who have wineries out in Nelson, which is slightly more remote, but they still have a tremendous connection to all the other wineries throughout the country. This is a really well-knit country. They really understand each other. They have a great sense of humor. It's funny how different their sense of humor is from Australians. It's a completely different sense of humor.
Really?
But it's wonderful to hear the byplay between them.
Do Australia and New Zealand get along okay?
No.
There's a little bit of a rivalry there.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I was
talking, like Canada and the U.S., very similar,
Okay, yeah.
I was talking to a bus driver in New Zealand.
We love them, but... yeah.
I was talking to a bus driver in New Zealand about 6 months ago, and I said, Australians really like to have a good time. And the bus driver said, we like to have a good time, too, but just don't tell anybody about it.
What happens in New Zealand stays in New Zealand.
Pretty much,
And are there... There's probably some varietals, some grapes that are a big part of New Zealand wines that we don't know anything about here, right?
Not as many as you'd think, but the difference is that Syrah, which is in New Zealand an absolutely cold climate grape, is really a warm climate grape in most of Australia. So when you get a bottle of Shiraz from Australia, it's probably going to be from a warmer climate, whereas a bottle of Syrah, same grape, grown in New Zealand, is going to be a cooler climate. It's a completely different wine then.
Susanna, you must have a good gig.
I do.
Telling people about New Zealand wines and the country itself.
I'm very grateful.
Yeah. How long have you been with him?
3.5 years.
Nice. Give us your background prior to that.
Prior to entering the wine industry, I sold BMW motorcycles for about 6 years.
Really?
I did, yeah, in Windsor, actually.
You're kidding.
Actually, that's where we first met. She was trying to sell me a motorbike like 10 years ago.
15?
She must be pretty good at it. BMW bikes,
I remember her for, 10, 15 years later. I was like, I know you. You tried to sell me a motorbike. Very successfully. I think I gave you a down payment, and.
And I pretended like I remembered him.
Right. Is this your first wine gig?
No, I started developing my interest in marketing when I was at the motorcycle dealership, but there's only so far I could go there, and so it's living in Santa Rosa at the time. It's almost hard to find a job in wine country that's not with a winery. So I accepted a position at Cubason Estate Wines in Napa.
Oh yeah,
and I worked there about 6 years.
Nice.
Before starting with Mount Beautiful.
Did you ever buy the bike?
I didn't. I went with a Triumph instead.
Well, and either way, you can't go wrong. BMW or Triumph, right?
Yeah. So, but yeah, and Stan and I ride together, so that's another kind of nuance we have.
How did you wind up in Tahoe? Was
We had a house in the Bay Area for years, and I still have an office in Benicia. And we originally started doing ski leases up in Tahoe, and then went to a full year-round lease, and then started looking at neighborhoods we wanted to buy, and we bought a cabin up there probably 6 or 7 years ago, maybe even more. And then once my daughter graduated high school, we said, you know, let's sell up here and move up there full-time, because I basically come out of the office during the week for a couple of days if I'm not in New Zealand, and my wife works out of the house as well, so it's actually worked out pretty good.
Mike, see if we can ever figure out how to do the show from Tahoe in New Zealand, all right?
Yeah.
What a great gig you got, dude.
It's okay. I'm not complaining. It's,
you better not. I don't want to hear it.
No one would listen.
Exactly. It's Mount Beautiful Wines in New Zealand. Susanna Mannion is here. Robert Watkins. Dan? Oh, wait a minute. Let me get Barry in here since he's hardly ever here anymore.
I'm going to try and do better, really.
Yes, we hope so. So give us your thoughts on New Zealand, Mount Beautiful, everything else.
Well, the whole category in general has grown in our store. The Sauvignon Blancs have been on fire for a long time. Definitely the biggest sellers. The prices have been stable for certainly the whole 3 years I've been at Bottle Barn, and hundreds of cases go out monthly. Mount Beautiful has been a steady... They're kind of like middle of the road on price, I'd say, and definitely worth it, because especially this Pinot we just started into. This is a beauty.
This is a gorgeous
one. Yeah, and you know, the whole category has been great for us in general, and actually provides a little competition to the local Sauvignon Blanc, I have to say. Probably go out in equal portions, you know, Dry Creek Sauvignon Blanc.
Before we get into this Pinot, before you talk about that, Dan, the Sauvignon Blancs, New Zealand versus... Sonoma County.
New Zealand tends to have a little bit more varietal characteristics, a little more intensity of varietal character. The Dry Creek area of Sonoma County gives you some of that varietal characteristics a little bit more distinctively, and that's one of its greatest attributes. You don't see it as much in some other regions of Sonoma County, and that's why a number of people who have gotten used to the distinctiveness of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc are buying it over California. Part of that is the price, but most of it is the fact that it's really identifiable. And it's fun. It's really a fun wine. And to be honest with you, I drink as much Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand as I do from California, even though the California stuff is the style that everybody loves around here.
Yeah, I see a lot of people doing both, and I think, you know, the geography, I think, comes in more into play in the Dry Creek, whereas the varietal, the branded style of New Zealand comes, you know, people get used to what they're going to get.
And I love Russian River Valley Sauvignon Blanc as well, but the prices for those wines are creeping up. And, of course, I love Napa Sauvignon Blanc a lot, but unfortunately they're becoming way out of my budget.
Really?
Well, a lot of them are going to be $30 to $35, and that's a lot of money to pay for Sauvignon Blanc.
Even then, they could be butting that over to Cabernet and charging $90 or $100, so...
Yeah.
Except now that there's a glut, never mind. Forget that one.
That wave is
Since Napa's always listening on Wednesdays, too, let me just remind all of you that a week or so ago, Wine Enthusiast magazine named Sonoma County the number one wine region in the world. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Huge, man.
It is a big deal.
I thought it was just the U.S., but no, it's the world. Yeah. Pretty cool. All right. Talk about this Pinot that you love.
This Pinot is just absolutely startling, but not to me. Of course, I've been down there, and I've tasted a bunch of the wines from North Canterbury, and the most impressive thing about these wines is how wonderfully structured they are. It is the structure that counts. It's bone in a bottle. This is Côte de Bone in a bottle. It's not Côte de Nuit. Côte de Nuit tends to be richer and fuller and bigger and...
All right, I'm throwing out a geek alert here.
Okay, sorry. This is the northern Burgundy region versus the smaller district of Côte de Bone. These wines are elegant, and they have loads of personality. This one is just spot on in terms of its aroma. It's just gorgeous. It has that sort of a little teeny bit of pencil lead character, but then there's this gorgeous red fruit, a little bit of tea leaf. Just it's startling wine. And what's the price on this? It's like giving it away.
Just under 30.
Oh, yeah. This is
28.
Really?
If this wine were being judged by people who understand Burgundy, mm-hmm. Their first reaction would be, oh, this has got to be $55 or $60 a bottle.
I can do that tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
You won't sell it then.
I hate to interrupt, but the aforementioned a whistleblower has identified multiple White House officials as witnesses to the potential presidential misconduct who could corroborate the complaint. This mm-hmm. is getting deeper and deeper every day, every minute. All right. Back to wine.
Back. Yeah. No comment. Just as a point of reference, anybody who tastes a New Zealand Pinot Noir always wants to compare it to one of the two or three more important or identifiable regions. Central Otago, Martinborough, which people don't talk about often enough. To me, North Canterbury is the coming region for Pinot Noir in New Zealand. Because the prices are always going to be fair. The wines are going to be ideally structured to go with food. You don't have to age them at all. You can drink them now, wait 3 or 4 years, still drink them. They'll be fabulous. And the price, if you're saying $28 for that wine, it's like giving it away. I think it's a gorgeous wine.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
It'd be interesting to put this in a blind tasting because this doesn't have like a New Zealand stamp on it.
No, it doesn't.
At all. Can put this in with Volnays, Russian River Pinots.
Russian River to me is, you know, that's how I look at it. If I compare it to anything over, you know, in this neck of the woods, it'd be Russian River to me. Mm-hmm. We were just up in IPNC and up in Oregon, and we were the only New Zealand brand there. I don't quite understand what happened, but we were hanging out with Rick Motion all week because we were next to him every event, it seemed like, but we just started drinking each other's wine, and you know, there's a lot of comparison. I mean, he's making some really fabulous stuff, but there's a grain of commonality there. But yeah, that's what I would identify with.
Yeah, I don't think I could pick this out of a wine as being from New Zealand. Or
well, I think part of it is the fact that North Canterbury is yet to be discovered by almost anybody. I mean, my favorite Cabernet Franc I ever tasted in my life was from North Canterbury. Cabernet Franc.
Are soils similar out here as well?
We have a lot of different soil types, and particularly on the vineyard, it's a windblown loess with a clay base and a alluvial gravel underneath that. Yeah. But on our site, which not only has the vineyard, but we have a farm around it, sheep and beef, there's 27 different soil types in think hectares, but we have about 2,000 acres right there. So there's 27 different types of soils, but most of the vineyard is kind of that windblown topsoil. And then the new vineyard we planted is more getting into lime. In fact, there's a lime quarry at the end of the block.
Oh, wow.
So that we got our first vintage from that block will be this year. So we're pretty excited about that.
You mentioned David Teese. He was the Mount Beautiful, founder, and then you bought.
No, he's the owner.
He's still there. Yeah. You work for him. Okay.
I'm fortunate in that David lets us kind of do our own thing. He's very not involved operationally. So he kind of sees where we're going, has some visions about what he wants to see, and then really lets us get on with it as a team. So,
and again, when did he start this?
So the first vintage was 07. He bought the property in 02.
Oh, that's all. Yeah. 07. I was thinking it was probably
we just had our 10th vintage anniversary, but actually it was 11, but who's counting? But yeah, so it's relatively young. And really it was set up, and most wineries in New Zealand are set up to export because of the population of New Zealand is quite small, so
yeah.
We always knew that U.S. was going to be our biggest market, and it is by far. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's 75% of our entire production.
Wow. And what is Dan drinking now?
This is 10 Barrels. It's Pinot Noir from 2015, and it's called 10 Barrels, which means that obviously they made 10 barrels, so it's about 250 cases or thereabouts, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
It was a small 2015, we built a new facility. So our issues prior to that were we owned the vineyard and we're all estate, but we didn't have our own facility to make the wines. And so you do all the hard work in the vineyard, and then you somewhat lose control of it once it goes to wherever you're doing your production. And for us, it was up in Blenheim. So we asked David, or actually we told him, we need to build a winery. So $4 million later, we for the 2015, we had our first facility that we did 100% of the production on site. And now that we could, we realized we should probably look at different blends or blocks that we want to keep separate. And so that's what we came up with, the 10 barrels. So it was literally 10 barrels of all of our barrels that made a really nice blend but didn't detract from the bigger blend. And the back of the label, instead of, I got rid of all the bump on the back and just listed the 10 barrels that we used that in this year. So age of the barrel, clone that went into it, toast. So it's kind of a simple back label, but it was really just a barrel selection.
A little richer, a little more concentrated, but still within the bounds of what North Canterbury gives you, which is personality of fruit, cherries, blackberries, things like that.
We're wrapping it up for this Wednesday. I just want to remind you, if you're interested in brewing beer, making wine at home, maybe making cider, curing olives, anything like that, the Beverage People, Sonoma County's fermentation headquarters since 1980, invites you to their store on Piner Road. They can help you craft your next beer masterpiece. Their goal is to ensure that you succeed and have fun with your hobby. They stock fresh, high-quality ingredients, well-made equipment at competitive prices. They always put their customers first. They're great folks, and it really, truly is an amazing place since 1980. TheBeveragePeople.com. Better yet, go to their store at 1845 Piner Road in Santa Rosa. TheBeveragePeople.com. Well, this has been a fascinating California wine country with Susanna Mannion and Robert Watkins from New Zealand. It's MountBeautiful.com, MTBeautiful.com. Fascinating stuff, folks.
Thank you very much.
One of these days, I'm going to make it out there. I don't care how damn long the plane is. Dan, you know what we're doing next week?
Next week, we're going to do gold medal winners, thanks to Barry.
From the Harvest Fair.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, quickly.
We'll bring in some of our, we're just starting to bring the wines in this week. The winners were announced on Sunday. So the whole middle of the store has been cleared out, and we've got about half of them in there right now. And by next week, we should have 95, 98% of the wines.
Okay.
And we'll bring in some of our favorite guys, some of the best of class winners.
Pre-Harvest Fair wine country on the show.
Yeah. The big tasting of the fairgrounds is the following weekend. So.
Right. Perfect. Have a great night, everybody.